Good morning once again. Great to see everybody. Appreciate so very, very much your presence. It is good to see you, and we're thankful that we're able to spend some time talking about a topic that's very, very important to me, and the idea of helping to convey to our children and grandchildren the importance of spiritual things. We must underscore the need. We understand that there's a problem, but a lot of young people are losing interest in spiritual affairs, and oftentimes it's because we've not set the proper example in front of them, and we can resolve to do better. But as we move into the next phase of this series, we've actually begun to move into some of the lessons that need to be taught. It's sad, but often the skills of parenting are escaping us. Many of us grew up in an era where moms and dads basically had a code of behavior that was expected out of children. And if they didn't measure up to that code of behavior, there were some rather severe consequences. They were rather abrupt, and sometimes they were rather harsh. But nonetheless, you learn not to mouth back to somebody. You learn not to sass. You learn to do as you were told. I don't remember my mom and dad ever saying, 1, 2, 3, and then reacting. But rather, it was, do it. And we complied. And unfortunately, as time has gone on, there have been many other voices saying, wait, there's better ways of doing this. And of course, they cited as a justification the fact that there were some parents who did go into the realm of being abusive, and I understand that. And that's not what we're addressing. But there were a lot of other parents who were doing it right. But now, you can find yourself at risk, even if you spat a child's leg in a grocery store because they won't quit screaming. You know, all of a sudden, you become abusive and somebody may intervene. And so it's put us at a disadvantage as to knowing what to do. And we've heard so many people kind of pontificate as to what is the right way of rearing children that we have a generation, I believe, of parents right now that are totally confused. What is the right way? How should this be done? And you read all these how to do it books, and every one of them has a different approach as to what's supposed to work in child rearing. And unfortunately, in this kind of confused state, there are many lessons that are not being taught. Now, part of that problem also gets into simply a matter of time management. Our society has gotten to the point that in many households, mom and dad both have to work to be able to make ends meet. And as a result of that, oftentimes the daily care of children is consigned to somebody else. And as a result of that, parents have very little time to actually interact with their children. And in the short amount of time that they have, you've still got the idea of getting the bath, getting them fed, you know, getting to bed on time so we can get up and go through the drill again tomorrow. And there's not a lot of time to do very much instruction. And I find many students coming to us at the middle school level that have not had much upbringing. There's a lot of things that they've just kind of experienced by trial and error, and it's a matter of survival skills. They've done whatever it took to get by in the environment in which they were living, and oftentimes many of these things are very socially incompatible with the skills of other students. And so we find ourselves doing a lot of instructing as to what is appropriate, why is it appropriate, and what is inappropriate, why that is not acceptable, and trying to help curb some of the outrageous behaviors that some students have had to resort to because they're screaming for attention. They're screaming for someone to listen to them, pay some attention to them, to enjoy teaching them, and to oftentimes, yes, even build parameters. Give me some limits. Help me understand what is within the bounds of the acceptable, and whenever I cross over those bounds, as I'm going to test them sometimes to see, are you going to consistently pull my chain and say that's inappropriate and get me back in line? Do you care that much? Are you really worried about me and my development, or are you just saying the things you're supposed to say? So there's a lot of teaching that is involved in helping children develop from that blank slate that we inherit as they're born into our families into the adults that they one day will be. We began yesterday in talking about some of the lessons that we need to teach our children. We began with talking about the fear of the Lord, talking about the existence of God, that He is the creator of heaven and earth, and that one day we will be judged about the life choices that we have made in this life. Beginning to serve God starts with the acknowledgement that He is, and that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. We're dealing with a large segment of our population that doesn't go to church. They don't know anything about God. They've been taught that religion was a waste of time, that it's all a bunch of judgmental people that just want to criticize you and think it's you, and that they are all very socially conscious. They are going to look down on you if you have a lower economic lifestyle than what they do, and they're going to be very quick to judge all of the things that you say and do. They're going to whisper behind your back. They are just a bunch of gossipy old people that are not going to be fun to be around. And so many folks have simply said, look, I need Sunday for me. And that is my day. It's not the Lord's day anymore. It's my day. And so I'm not going to be working on Sundays. So that's going to be my day to do the yard work, my day to go to the lake, my day to go camping or whatever else I choose to do. And I'm not going to cramp my schedule on that day with this thing of going to church. And so helping young people understand the existence of God, having a knowledge and a fear of the Lord, is of course critical importance as we start this process. Because they need to see in us, and we need to convey to them, the need to trust in the Lord. That we have a book of answers. Whenever we're trying to figure out if a certain course of action is appropriate or not, what do the Scriptures say? And we have counsel from God's Word that will apply in principle. It's not going to address my exact situation. Should I date this guy or not? Well, look at some principles about proper behavior. Look at some principles of godliness. And you begin to see some things that help you make a good decision as to whether this is the kind of person that maybe I would want to spend the rest of my life with. And as a result of that, we begin to use principles from Scripture to help us in our day-to-day decision-making. And we need to trust that these answers are indeed the right ones. We noticed yesterday that we need to honor the Lord through giving of ourselves. Yes, we give as we've been prospered. That's also a factor in this. But we've got to get out of that shell that life is all about me and mine, and give me, provide for me, give me what I want. I remember we learned this lesson kind of the hard way whenever our first one came along. You know, as first-time parents, you kind of do trial and error in a lot of different ways. And it wasn't any big deal if we went through the checkout lane at the store or whatever, and we spent an extra 50 cents or whatever and got him either some little toy or some little treat or some little something that was kind of a gift to him. We thought that it was just a manifestation of love, and it was no big deal until we saw the monster that we had created. You know, then it became expected. And every time you were around the store, you were supposed to get me something, or there was going to be a rather stormy consequence because you were going to pitch a fit wanting something to be given in every single instance. And so we realized what the effects of a little bit of spoiling can do, and we had to go back and say, wait a minute, we don't always get the things that we want. Sometimes we have to wait a while on certain things so that we appreciate them. It's not just about you. There's the whole family financial picture here that has to be taken into account. All of these lessons have to be given in an age-appropriate vocabulary, but nonetheless, it's the idea that life is not just about giving me what we want. I'll never forget, I was substitute teaching at a rather elite private school during the years that I was preaching in South Alabama. And one day, there was a knock at the door. The classrooms at this school, you know, they kind of opened out to the outdoors. It was a much milder climate, and so you basically stepped out into a walkway and went down this covered walkway, and here were your various classroom doors, and there was a parking lot right out there along the side of the school. And there was a knock at the door, and in a big way, you know, there was a dad there who, whenever we opened the door, presented his daughter with a big, red sitting just outside the classroom door so that everyone could see what Mom and Dad have gotten for me. And I thought to myself, if you get all of this at 16, what's it going to be from here on? You know, and it was the idea that they had the wherewithal to do that. But what was going on also was a tremendous amount of having worked with this child for a while, a little bit of pampering that kind of got outside the realm of what was even sensible. Some parents, oftentimes in home situations that are rather turbulent, think that the way to win the affection of their children is by getting them stuff. Sometimes there's been a breakup in the family, and so Mom and Dad compete with each other for the affections of the kids by supplying them with stuff. And so they try to outbid each other for the affections of the kids, and the kids soon tap into that and know how to play the game. But the whole point that we get from the Word of God is it's not about the stuff. It's about what we can give to others, what we can do to help glorify God. It's not about me and give me the stuff that we want. It's amazing to me. As a kid growing up, we used to talk about various cars, makes and models of cars, and the various attributes of those cars, and who had the hottest car and the fastest car and all those kinds of things. Now they talk about shoes, or they talk about cell phones. And it's what's the newest version of a certain electronic device? What's the newest version of some, you know, game of whatever that's a video game? It's the idea with some kids, and I've watched it happen, they will come in a $200 pair of tennis shoes just to kind of show them off to what everyone got, you know, what their folks got for them, but they only wear them for a day or two. Because then they take them back to Walmart and turn them in so they have another pair of very expensive shoes. And so it makes it look like they have this whole closet full of really classic shoes. And I mean, some of them are in neon colors. You can see them coming all the way down the hall. But nonetheless, they have all of these selections of shoes that they are able to wear just because they know how to take advantage of the return policy of Walmart. But nonetheless, we've got to move from that materialistic mindset to the idea that it is a giving of ourselves, having a care and concern for others. And sometimes we manifest that in financial ways, but other times it is in bestowing what we can to help somebody else. We've been very grateful. Here, a few months back, my father-in-law had a fall and hit his head and had to deal with the recovery from a concussion. And at 80 years old, that's been a little bit of a slow process for him. And he has bemoaned it greatly that he cannot do at 80 years old what he used to do when he was 40 years younger. And he is now building a new garage at the house. And he wants to, rather than have to drive to the church building, which is several miles away, to take care of, you know, having some study time and to have access to his books and materials, he wants to move his office to his house. And the house is too small. So, in this new garage, he is finishing out a room that is going to be his new office. Heated and cooled, all bookcases everywhere. You know, have space to move all of his stuff to one new location. Putting a bathroom out there in the garage so that he can go to work by simply walking out to the garage and spending his time in study and being able to function out there. Well, there's a lot to that. He was able to contract to have the shell of the garage put up, but this is all that stuff of the insulation and the electrical wiring and the heating and cooling system and all that kind of stuff. Well, the men of the congregation there have been wondering. And they come and they work endless hours. It's a big thrill to them. These are mechanical and carpentry skills that they have. And it's after work, they can help out my father-in-law, and they love doing it. Sometimes he feels bad that they're being so benevolent to him and giving him so much that he doesn't feel like he deserves. But to them, it is a wonderful opportunity to give, to do. And oftentimes, I have found as we go through life, that's a lesson as we get older, as grandparents or whatever, that we've got to learn. We've been on the giving end a whole lot down through the years. We sacrificed for our children. We worked hard for employers. We gave to other people. And then as we get older and slow down a little bit, we actually fight other people. And don't do that. No, you can't do that for me. I'll stay home rather than get a ride to church, even though I can't drive very much anymore. I'll just stay home rather than bother somebody. Give me a ride to church. There's a whole lot of people who would love to be so bothered. Oftentimes, we push people away who are looking for opportunities to do good. The Bible says that we are to be a peculiar people, zealous of good works. There are a lot of people who are looking for a chance to do something. They just don't know what's appropriate to do. And then they get the idea, oh, no. I know I've been sick for, 3 weeks and I can't cook very much, but you're going to be bringing me meals? No, that's too much bother. You know what? I'll stay home and eat a can of soup rather than enjoy the meal that you're providing. We've got to learn to be gracious receivers whenever the situation warrants it. The idea of giving is something that we need to give other people the opportunity to do. And so sometimes we have to maybe kind of swallow a little bit of pride, but there's some fellows that I know that one of their biggest joys in the world is mowing grass. Never have understood that myself, but they just think it's a wonderful thing to do. I grew up mowing grass, and we had a pasture field to mow, and we called it a yard. And so I got my fill of mowing grass at a very early age. But there are some people who can spend hours on a lawnmower, and they think they are in heaven. It is such a wonderful thing that they enjoy doing. And so they enjoy going around and mowing people's yards. And I've actually seen, no, I can do this. They're enjoying it. They're volunteering to do it. They're wanting to do it. So you sit up there on the porch and supervise and say thank you when they're done. There are some things that we've got to learn to do in nurturing this giving concept. And sometimes in our lives we are better at it than we are at other times. But nonetheless, it is a giving proposition that we need to develop so that life is not just all about me. And our kids need to see that. They need to be sensitive to that. I know oftentimes some of my fondest memories of dealing with my grandparents, where they lived next door to us. And it was going over and spending time with Grandpa and Grandma. And it was doing all those little chores that were awkward for them to do. You need something off that top shelf, Grandma, hang on a second, I'll get it. And being able to realize that I could take time from my schedule, have a good time with them, and it was mutually beneficial. Those moments need to occur as we realize that life is not just about me. And then, as we mentioned, as we ended up yesterday, nothing remains hidden. Achan learned that fact. David learned that fact. There were other Bible characters who tried at great length to do the great cover-up so that nobody would know the iniquity that they had been into, what they were sneaking around to do. Well, the Bible makes it abundantly clear that everything's open. Everything will be found out. God knows it all. And oftentimes I have to inject here that He knows all those posts that go on the internet. All of those things. Oftentimes moms and dads are not as skillful at using the internet as our younger generation is. And so as a result, they get busy posting and saying things in a social media format. And as parents and grandparents, we don't even know how to tap into it. And it was so sad. Sometimes as a preacher, to see some of the things that the kids post on their Facebook pages as the preacher. And here you see them laughing and posing with a beer can in one hand and a cigarette in the other, and aren't I a great party animal? You see them in church every Sunday morning. And so you begin to understand that sometimes we can project a persona or a personality that's not true and real. But sometimes we perpetuate that, thinking that we're getting by with it because teachers won't know, moms and dads won't know. Nowadays, they even, oftentimes, prospective employers will search all the social media sites to see all the stuff you've ever put on Facebook or social media. That means the bullying comments that you made back in seventh grade, they still are somewhere. You may have hit a delete button. but they still are found some. You put that stuff on the internet and it is there forever. And as a result, oftentimes there have been people who have been denied access to school, that have been denied security clearances, that have been denied jobs, not because they didn't have the graduation requirements and the educational background, but it's whenever they analyze their posts on social media, it says a whole lot about the other side. And so it's important that we understand from an early age that nothing is going to be hidden. And so we need to be honest and straightforward. Now that doesn't give an excuse for meanness and inappropriate behavior. Sometimes people think, if I'm going to be honest, that means I can tell you that you are a terrible, horrible person and smile when I say it, and that's supposed to make it all better. Well, no, there's some things that just are inappropriate to say, period. We need to understand the difference. But we need to be able to understand truth, to understand appropriateness, and live within those boundaries. And so we need to teach that to our children. They have a way of bringing things to your attention, whether you want that to come out or not. And that takes us to the next point in our process. One of the things that kids have got to learn is to watch your mouth. Watch the things that you say. All too often, this is something that we don't really spend enough time talking about. Here a few years ago, I was at the county fair in the county where we live. And while the grandkids went off with Tammy to ride some rides with their moms and dads, and they were out and about, I was doing the babysitting thing. I was on a van with a baby carrier, and I had one of the little ones there that was asleep. And there were some teenagers from the local high school that came by and was hanging out for a few minutes. And I could overhear their conversation. And it was some of the filthiest, most vile comments and insinuations and the name-calling and the use of terms. I wanted to move. Because even after they left, you just felt dirty. Because it was such rotten speech. Over in Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 24, someone says, put away from thee a froward mouth, and perverse lips put far from thee. We need to learn to watch what we say. Yes, we live in a free country, but there are some things that are still inappropriate to say. The extreme example of that is, again, we live in a free country. We can say what we want to say, but it is even against the law to be in a darkened movie theater and start yelling fire and causing a panic. You can wind up in legal trouble for that. There are some things that are inappropriate to say. And we need to understand the difference. And be able to communicate meaningfully instead of in an insulting fashion. Over in Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 12, a naughty person, a wicked man, walketh with a froward mouth. In other words, we're saying a whole lot about ourselves by what comes out of our mouth. I've seen young ladies back through the years, when as I was a teenager, we were just starting to date, you'd see a girl that really was attractive. She had all the physical attributes of beauty that really caught your eye until she opened her mouth. And whenever you began to hear what came out of her mouth, you soon decided she's not quite so pretty anymore. And you went shopping elsewhere. The mouth says a whole lot about what's going on inside the heart of the person. And the Lord taught us that it's what comes out of the mouth that defiles the man. He said it's not about eating with unwashed hands. It's the trash that comes out of your mouth. In Proverbs chapter 15, going down to verse 28, Solomon says, the heart of the righteous studieth to answer. They think before they speak. But the mouth of the wicked poureth out evil things. There are some folks that are always trying to cruise to cause mischief. What is it that we can do to get somebody else in trouble? What can we do that is going to be some sign of rebellion? What are we going to do that is going to put this person in their place? That's a lot of the issues of bullying that we have to work with. It's individuals who simply have no restraint in what they say and somehow feel that they have the right to pick at, humiliate, and embarrass other people endlessly because they feel like it makes them feel superior. It's kind of like growing up on the farm, we raised chickens. And there's a pecking order in the chicken house. Our chickens ran free. And you've got some that every feather is in place and no chicken bothers them. Then you got that big group in the middle that only get pecked on by the ones that are at the top of the ladder. And then you have those poor bottom-rung chickens. They get pecked on by everybody, and those are usually the first ones that you carry out of the chicken house daily. Because they get pecked on by everybody, they get crowded out for food, they get mistreated on an endless basis, and eventually they are the first that are most vulnerable and to die. You put a pack of kids together in a school and a pecking order soon emerges. You get a new kid that moves in, and you've got some real suspicious eyes thrown that direction, waiting to find out where this kid's going to fit in the pecking order of things. And there are some kids that feel very threatened by a newbie that shows up in the school. Here is somebody who might be more popular than me, or smarter than me, or somehow might replace me, and it's game on. And all kinds of things and hateful actions are done to try and intimidate and put this person in their place, so to speak. We can do a lot better in teaching our kids on the appropriateness of kindness and tolerance and understanding it, because you have to treat people right and it'll all work out in the end. Matthew chapter 12, Jesus was talking about this in verses 36 and 37. He said, "But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned." So the Lord's listening to all the crap that comes out of our mouths. All of those things that we say that are gossipy and inappropriate, the Lord's aware of all of that. As parents, we've got to remember this, and we also have to instill it in our children, that we are accountable for the things that we say. Words do mean something. And also often we spout off, "Oh, I didn't mean anything by that." Well then, why did you say it? And sometimes that's a harsh reality for some kids, that there's actually some consequence to this, that you actually are upset because I said this. I was just saying, yeah, you were just saying that which was inappropriate to say. And so we've got to work on being able to help with the things that we speak. Because you never know who's listening. True story. One day there was a family came to the house. They were all upset because there had been an incident between them and the preacher of their home congregation. They weren't members, they were Irish preachers. They were thinking about changing churches, but they were just so mad. And they told the story. That they had a fish pond outside their house. They had a fish trap out there in that fish pond. And they had told the preacher that anytime he wanted to get a mess of fish, he was more than welcome to come over and check that trap and get a few fish for them to eat, that they were happy to share with him. They were a very affluent family, and it was no big problem. That was a nice gesture on their part. Well, the preacher took them up on the offer. And one day he decided they were going to have a fish fry at their house. And so he went over, and there wasn't anybody for him to talk to, or at least he chose not to say anything to anybody. He just rode out there to the fish trap and took out every single fish that was inside and took it home and cooked it for supper. Didn't realize that this affluent family had planned a fish fry at their house that night. They were planning on using all of those fish to entertain the guests that were coming to their house. And so later in the day, when they went out there to get some fish, there was no fish in the fish trap. Well, they were fit to be top of the last minute. They had to change the menu or go dash off the store to buy some fish. It just made the biggest mess. And he was so inconsiderate, he didn't even ask permission. He didn't say anything to us about it. And they just were railing on and on and on. I finally got them calmed down. It was just a matter of a miscommunication. Those things happen. You know, you don't need to change congregations over a mess of fish. You know, and we got everything pretty well back in focus, I thought. Well, the next day, it just so happened that preacher had borrowed a book of mine. and he was bringing that book back to me. And he came up and rang the doorbell, and I stepped down the porch, and we got to talking. And we were talking about various and sundry things, and our son comes bopping out the door. He's, you know, early elementary school, whatever. And he just is swinging around the post there on the porch. And, oh, is that the preacher that stole the fish? I wanted to die. Well, the problem was he picked up on that. What do you mean stole fish? Where do you ever hear a story like that? Now, somebody, I didn't know that, you know, he just went off on wanting to know all those details. And I had a very difficult few minutes trying to get everything explained and centered down. All because some piece of information was spoken that really would rather not have been spoken. Our son did not really need to hear all of that conversation that day. I did not even realize he was in the house to listen. But we paid for it dearly. You know, we've got to learn to watch what we say. It's a major challenge. James tells us in the book of James, the tongue is an unruly evil that no man can tame, but we got to work at it. And we've got to teach our children. So we've got to teach them to think before they act. There are consequences to what you do. So many times, kids do not realize, because of youth and inexperience, that the things that they do can get way out of hand really, really fast. In Proverbs chapter 4, going down to verse 26, he says, ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Over in Proverbs chapter 14, and going down to verse 12, it seems right to us. He said, there's a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of him. A lot of times we never dream that this simple little action on our part could result in so much trauma. And that great big incident can happen based upon a little thing. There was a story that we read in our sixth grade class this past year, and the parents have a real problem with the boy who's starting to run with the wrong crowd. And he is fascinated with playing with matches. And so he begins to make little parachutes out of toilet paper and then he'll light them on fire and let them, you know, spiral down into the commode or whatever. And so he's back in the bathroom playing with matches. And he thinks there's not going to be a problem. Well, it was the potential for a great big problem. And mom finally catches him at it, and there's all kinds of consequences. But to him, it was just a little instant game. He didn't see any problem with that. But it could have burned the house down. So we've got to learn to think before we act, and that we are responsible for our actions. And one of the biggest problems working with young people is the crowd that they run with. And oftentimes, as parents, we've got to go slow and careful on how we handle this. Because the more sometimes we stomp and rave about you're not going to be around so-and-so, is the more that they're going to find a way to work around us where they can get together. And so they need to understand why we have a concern and what the issue is. In Proverbs chapter 6, verses 27 and 28, Solomon says, can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one go upon a hot coal and his feet not be burned? He said, as young people, not being as experienced as adults, they may not realize how much of those habits rub off. But sometimes we become fascinated with the daring insolence of other people. And we fail to see and understand what kind of mess we bring on. Story of a child that buddies up with or is assigned to work on a school project with one of the rowdiest, most obnoxious kids in the class. And lo and behold, this person who's matched up with him is kind of meek and mild, a very studious student. The teacher thought it was going to be a good match, and maybe that studious student would help Big Mouth over here learn how to behave himself. Well, it went the other way. And so Mr. Studious Student becomes fascinated with somebody who was so brave and so bold as to read off a teacher, use obscenities in class, and not care about what other people thought of him. And he began to pick up the same habits. And so in shock, the school officials called parents and said, "We had talked. There's something going on here." And the parents were absolutely floored to find out that little Johnny has picked up this colorful vocabulary, and that he is now defying teachers, and he is now picking up some of the same habits of this loudmouth kid who had a bad reputation to start with, but now he's fallen in love with that boldness, and he finds it as a new badge of courage. We've got to be able to help them understand that those habits do indeed rub off. We can wind up hearing certain phrases used over and over again, and the next thing you know, they're coming out of our mouths. We see that type of insolence and disrespect demonstrated enough that pretty soon we pick up doing the very same things. Paul told the Corinthians over 1 Corinthians 15:33, "Be not deceived, evil communications corrupt good manners." You hang with that crowd, it's going to bleed all over you. And so we have to help our young people understand that. But oftentimes as parents, we want to be the bad guys. We don't want to draw the line. But that line has got to be drawn, and a why needs to be attached to it. And oftentimes kids don't see it. They're not going to understand. And so we're going to have to time that conversation very strategically. Whenever Mr. Bad has gotten into big time trouble about something, it's a wonderful time to say, "Now see, there's a problem here. If he does this, and he does this, and he does that, and you call him your friend, guess what? You're going to get put in the same pot and category as he's in. Even though you don't see yourself the same way, the rest of people will." And so there's lessons that we've got to teach, but it's got to be taught strategically rather than just blatantly say, "No, you can't, because I said so." They need more to understand the thought process behind your restrictions. But being honest, we mean the statistics that I pointed out earlier in this series. You know, it's so sad that oftentimes the kids that are going to church, so to speak, are just as prone to lying and dishonesty as our kids walk in the street that never darken the church door. It's called survival. It's getting me by. It's helping get me out of trouble. It's whatever I have to do to save my own skin. Proverbs 11, verse 1, Solomon says, "A false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight." In other words, a false balance is whenever you're cheating and kind of putting your thumb on the scale and giving information that's not true and accurate. You're not being honest. And Solomon says, "A just weight is God's delight." In other words, God delights in our honesty and truthfulness and doing things fairly and right. In Proverbs chapter 12, I'm going down to verse 22, "Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but they that deal truly are his delight." God's proud of us whenever we are willing to stand up for what's right. And whenever we do what is right. And whenever we understand that honesty is indeed the best policy, even though sometimes it may not seem that way at first glance. But we need to be able to work that out. That was one of the things I tried to teach our kids from the very beginning. I will help you through the challenges of life. If there is something that happens where you're being falsely accused or whatever else, you know, I'll stand up for you. Whatever we can do, we'll go through this together. But there is one requirement. You've got to be honest with me. You've got to be truthful with me. You've got to tell me what really has happened. Because I don't want surprises. I'm not going to stick my neck out to be defensive of you and to stand up for you and to paint you in the best possible light and to plead your case only to have my feet cut out from underneath me because you lied to me. And what you told me was a story was not the way it really happened. I need the truth. Then we can face the problem. And even if you were in the wrong, okay, we'll take our bumps and bruises and we'll survive it. But you've got to tell me the truth. You've got to be honest with me. There needs to be a household premium on that. Sometimes we do these things and And we don't realize it. It's like whenever moms and dads are on the same page, now your dad's not going to be like this. And he really won't put up with this. So we're just not going to tell dad. And we start playing one side against the other. Sometimes that blows up in a big, ugly kind of way. As moms and dads, we need to be on the same page. And we need to be able to be honest with each other. There were a lot of times that as kids growing up, we said, well, if we ask mom, she's going to say no. But dad sometimes will say yes. And one time I made the mistake of shooting my mouth off when dad heard that, and I got myself into all kinds of trouble. I want to have a friend come home to our house for Sunday afternoon. And oftentimes there were so many chores that mom needed for us to do, or she had other plans. And so she said, no, today's not a good day. And so I said, son, ask mom. Let's go ask dad. He's busy shaking hands with everybody back at the door. He'll probably say yes, not even realize what he said yes to, you know. And so I started going to dad. And after that, it was, go ask your mother. I hate that. You know, he's go ask your mother. You know, because they were going to be on the same page, and they weren't going to let us play one against the other. So we've got to be honest. And we've got to help them understand that there is a value in listening to godly advisors. In Proverbs chapter 11, going down to verse 14, where there is no counsel, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. Children need to know who are the trustworthy counselors that they can turn to. Who are those that we have confidence in? Sometimes there is a lesson to be taught, and maybe it's the coach, or maybe it's another person in church, or maybe it's their best friend who might teach that lesson more effectively than I can as a parent. And so there's no problem in maybe coordinating signals on that. In Proverbs chapter 13, and going down to verse 20, he that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Once again, who we hang with is of great importance. In Proverbs 15, going to verse 31, the ear that heareth the reproof of life abideth among the wise. There's a story about what Amnon did in planning the rape of his half-sister Tamar. And there's a boy in that story named Jonadab. Actually, he was a cousin, I believe. And Jonadab was the one who orchestrated the whole thing. Amnon was wishing that he could have his way with this girl. And Jonadab says, well, you're the crown prince. You're entitled. Why don't we just work it out this way? And he gave him the plot. Just pretend you're sick. And ask dad to have your half-sister bring us something to eat. Have the house all to yourself, and then just take it from there. Jonadab's bad counsel resulted in the rape of the girl. There are some folks who are not above setting you up to do all kinds of things that can bring calamity to you. So we need to listen to sound advice rather than to those who are trying to mess us up. Once again, from an earlier stage, we need to help our young people understand the importance of a godly spouse. I realize that in many communities, the numbers of Christians that are attending the worship services with the Lord's people, that number is rather slim. And even among that number, there's some of them, quite frankly, I didn't want my kids taking. Because there were habits going on there that weren't going to work real well in the long run. But that's why, in our household situation, we wound up being at gospel meetings and going to other places and other arrangements where there were lots of chances for our kids to interact with other peers who were about the same age and to be able to maybe find a spouse from among those more savory numbers. Because oftentimes we just settle for it. And we wind up choosing somebody who's not going to help us get to heaven. In Proverbs chapter 12, and going down to verse 4, a virtuous woman is a crown to her husband, but she that maketh ashamed is a rottenness to his bones. My mom always said that she was going to primarily stay out of that hunt for a wife, because as far as she was concerned, she'd done all she could to help us learn some of the right priorities to pick. And so her idea was that I want you to make your choice. choice, because that way if you get a wonderful wife, it's because of the wonderful choice that you made. And if you wind up getting a rotten one, you got nobody to kick but yourself. And so my mom wasn't big at getting into the matchmaking category of trying to match us up as to who we should be with or not. About the only comment I can remember was one that she made when Tammy and I first started dating. You have to understand the context here. I was a sophomore in college, and Tammy was in seventh grade. And she was worshiping in a local congregation close to the university where I was attending. And she was as tall then as she is now. And I had no idea that she was in middle school. And, you know, we hung out at her dad's house, and I went over to her mom and dad's, and we didn't, you know, do anything outrageous or whatever. It was only always highly chaperoned, but I just figured that was the protective parents that she had. It wasn't until several months on down the road that I found out she was 6 years younger than I was. And I made some comment to mom about that, and she just kind of huffed, and she says, well, it's like this. If she was a daughter of mine, you wouldn't be dating her. And I said, thanks, Mom. But 5 years later, everything continued on in a positive way. We got married 2 days after she graduated out of high school. And that was, what, some 41 years ago. But anyway, at the same time, we've got to be able to understand the value in finding that wife that is indeed going to help us. In Proverbs 18 and verse 22, whoso findeth a wife findeth a good thing and obtaineth favor of the Lord. In Proverbs 25 and going down to verse 24, it is better to dwell in the corner of the housetop with a brawling woman in a wide house. If there are some things that cause major storms in the relationship now, it's on again, off again, and the fights are knocked down, drag outs over every little thing, don't think that's going to change once there's a ring on the finger. Understand going into those relationships that if it's not going to be a compatible relationship, you need to see it early and get out of it before it's too late. All too often we forget to give that advice until the child thinks they found Mr. or Miss Perfect and they think they're in love. And then you can't tell them anything. Because at that point, because of love, they become blind, deaf, and dumb. And so now you're just trying to get in the way. You're just jealous. You just have all these other motives. You just don't know them like I do. And on the defense mechanisms click in. But this needs to start early. It's like the story of the school teacher who was teaching a lesson in biology. He brought in a vase of roses. He took one of the roses out and passed it around the class for examination to see how that rose was put together. To see all the different parts of that rose, to smell the fragrance of that rose, to understand everything about that rose, with its thorns, its construction, the leaf formation, everything else. The rose went all the way around the class, and then he takes it and puts it back in the vase of flowers. And then at the end of the period, just before the class is ready to leave, he said, okay, y'all take a rose and take it home to your mom's. Last period of the day, and I'm sure that would make her day. Pinky out a rose and take it home. And so he goes around and says, everyone, choose a rose. There was one more rose in the vase than there was kids. What rose do you think was left in the vase? The one that made friends. He says, now think about it. A lot of times young people fail to understand that lesson. They become way too promiscuous, thinking that it's not going to have any consequence. But then at the end, oftentimes they're the one who realizes that no one's looking their direction. Also, we find, as Solomon teaches us, whenever we're doing things that are inappropriate, don't be surprised when life gets tough. In Proverbs 13 and verse 15, good understanding giveth favor, but the way of the transgressor is hard. Don't be surprised when life seems to fall apart, when you're making ungodly choices. In Proverbs 16 and verse 2, all the ways of a man are clean in his own eyes. It's going to seem like the right choice, but the Lord weighs the spirits. And so life is going to oftentimes be very difficult for us because we made the bad choices that made it that way. So we need to understand the importance from an early age of making righteous choices. And one of the things that makes us develop this steely countenance against instruction, against help, and against guidance is all because we are filled with pride. We think we know better. We've gotten headstrong. We have a very inflated view of our knowledge and strength. In Proverbs 16 and verse 18, pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Go over in Proverbs chapter 6. Solomon gives a listing of some things that God absolutely hates. Things that are an abomination to him. And notice what the first three of them are. A proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. That seems dramatic to put the three of those into the same phrase. But that's how God sees it. The very first one in the steps is that proud look coupled with a lying tongue. God doesn't like it. We'll pay the price for it when we choose to go down that path. Proverbs chapter 13, going down to verse 10. Only by pride cometh contention, but with the well-advised is wisdom. Sometimes we wonder why we're so quarrelsome. Why is it we always have to answer back? Why is it we always have to have the last word? Why is it we always have to be right? It's because we've got some problems with pride. That's the bottom line. It's got to be my way. I've got to be right, and I've got to move with it. And as a result, we quit listening. We've got to be the instructor of all men. Those are some tough lessons and complicated lessons to teach. And then finally, whenever it's all said and done, we have to understand the importance of a good reputation. Proverbs 22 and verse 1, a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. When we were starting to date as teenage boys, and when we began to move away from home and strike out more and more on our own path, Dad talked to us and simply made a point. He said, "Guys, I don't have a whole lot of this world's goods to give you. You know, it's not like you're in line for a fortune some way or another. You're going to have to make your own way." He said, "The only thing that I've been able to give you in significant measure is a good name. You're a rock." And he said, I would thank you to take care of the name I've given you." He said, "We've tried real hard to be what we need to be throughout this community. We've tried to stand up for the ways of the Lord as best we could. We've tried to do what's right. Not always been perfect, but we've tried hard." And he said, "Now, Robin's name is going to fall on your shoulders. And what you do with it is going to be up to you. But I would thank you to take care of that name." I've lived in several different communities down through the years. And sometimes you wind up kind of rolling your eyes. School teachers are bad about this. You know, "Oh no, here comes another one of that family." And we know that family. And that family's been a burden on every teacher who's ever had one of those illnesses. They've always been, you know. And we begin to think about the name that that family has. The contentions, the problems, maybe the lack of care or whatever else. Not a real pretty picture. And so we have to ask ourselves, what kind of picture does the community get whenever they think of us and our family name? And how well have we taken care of it? That also works to be a restraining influence. Through the years, sure, running around with the guys at school and being with friends, there were opportunities presented where we could have gotten into all kinds of mischief. There was a gang one time that thought it would be fun to go take a basket of hedge apples and go over the interstate overpass and bomb vehicles as they went underneath the overpass with these rotten apples. And so, you know, they all thought it'd be good. Come on, let's all go. And I said, nah, I don't think so. I was about the only one of the gang that didn't go. And I was one of the only ones of the gang that wasn't there when the cops closed in on both ends of the overpass and took them all downtown. I was glad that I wasn't there. But you begin to think about the inferences of that name. And a lot of times it was the case that I would forego certain things because I didn't want the chance of there being trouble and it reflecting back on Mom and Dad. A lot of times that was the biggest restraint that kept me from getting into all kinds of mischief and trouble, was because I didn't want to shame Mom and Dad. I loved them too much. I respected them too much. I didn't want to besmirch the family name. And so there were a lot of times when, yeah, that's what everybody else was doing, and I could understand that. But that was my little bit of ownership. That was something I could control. And it was my decision. There were a lot of things that I wasn't going to get into because I didn't want to bring shame on the whole family because of my misbehavior. So I hope we've learned some lessons, or taught, at least had a chance to think about some lessons that apply to this idea of rearing children. Now, that's not all there is to this. We're going to be moving on from this point and looking at some other skills and talents that we're going to use in helping to save our children and grandchildren. One is to be a personal example ourselves, and two, let's get busy teaching the stuff that needs to be taught. But there's a few more keys in this process, and we'll pick those up as we go a little bit further on in the study through the rest of the week. Any questions, comments, or observations?